Congratulations. You've been accepted into the inaugural class of Therapy for Black Girls University. Whether packing for a new year on campus, thinking through your gap year, enrolling in a community college, or grabbing your souls for graduation, TBGU is here to help you thrive at this stage of your life and beyond.
Hi, I'm Zaria Taylor, and I'm the TBG podcast production intern. We'll return to Jaina right after the break.
Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I've seen quite a few videos on social media recently of young women soliciting help in finding the perfect dress for graduation. Might I suggest you add Macy's to your list? They have lots of options for dresses that will transition perfectly from under your gown to that incredible dinner with family after the ceremony. Check out options from brands like On 34th, Michael Kors, DKNY, and many more. Shop at Macy's.com or in-store. Hey ladies, it's Dr. Joy. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
Last year, videos of a flooding at Clark Atlanta University went viral. I know I'm not the only one who sees videos like these and wonders how the climate crisis will continue to impact me and my friends who are in college. To help mitigate some of the anxiety I'm sure we all have around the climate crisis, I'm joined today by Gen Z climate activist Wawa Gathiru. Wawa is the founder and executive director of Black Girl Environmentalists, the largest national organization dedicated to empowering Black girls and women in the climate movement. She has been recognized as a Glamour College Woman of the Year, a Forbes 30 Under 30 recipient, and was featured on the January 2023 cover of Vogue, alongside Billie Eilish and seven other climate activists. In our conversation today, Wawa breaks down some key terms relevant to the climate crisis, ways we can get involved with the environmental justice movement on our campuses, and why it's important for college students in particular to care about climate change. Here's our conversation. Thank you, Wawa, for being with us today. You are a climate storyteller and founder of Black Girl Environmentalists. I would love to hear the story behind the birth of Black Girl Environmentalists and how your journey into the world of climate action began. Could you walk us through that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, first, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to share more about my story and to share about Black Girl Environmentalists. The story and the seed idea for BGE started when I joined the climate movement. So I joined climate when I was 15 years old. I had a really pivotal environmental science teacher who had added a chapter on environmental justice, which essentially meant it introduced me to this long tradition of particularly matriarchs of color that have been across the diaspora, essentially at the forefront of earth advocacy. And I was also learning that the climate crisis was disproportionately impacting Black and brown people around the world, yet we were the least represented in leadership or in the narratives that we were hearing. So very early in my journey, I started joining climate organizations where I was from in the state of Connecticut, and I quickly realized that the climate movement that I was coming accustomed to did not have any space for Black women or Black youth in general. I was the youngest person by at least 20 years. In every space that I was in, I was the only person of color, always the only Black person in Hartford. So there were all these discrepancies that I was seeing while I was also learning about how Black women in particular are experiencing the brunt of environmental degradation and the climate crisis, and getting honestly really frustrated and angry at the lack of space for us to be resourced and empowered. So I remained in the climate space, you know, at 15, now I'm 24. And all these years, every year, I was like, I wish there was a space for us. And so in 2020, I made an Instagram account called Black Girl Environmentalist. And the rest is history. Now we're a nonprofit.
I love that. And thank you for explaining your process. What is the significance of establishing a dedicated space for Black women and non-binary individuals within environmentalism?
So the process has been a really interesting one. I think what's different about BGE from a lot of other nonprofits is that the concept of the organization came after the community. So like I said, I started an Instagram page in the summer of 2020, I was just really frustrated at the lack of space for Black women and Black gender expansive people to talk about our unique experiences in the climate movement. At the same time, I wrote an article for Vice. Essentially, the title is It's Time for Environmental Studies to Own Up to like Erasing Black People or something like that. And it went really, really viral in the climate space. And the number one audience that was reaching out to me were Black women and Black girls in particular, other early career people that were like, I'm having the same exact experience. And that was the first time that they knew that there was someone else out there going through the very same things, but staying because the climate crisis is impacting our community. So we need to be in those spaces. So what was cool is that I took the step of taking this Instagram page and transforming it into a nonprofit because the community continued to grow and remain strong 3 years after. That was a huge aspect. And then also, even though I am myself very early career, I've been in the climate movement for 10 years now. And all these experiences that were seeding this idea for BGE, they were not and are not unique experiences. There are Black women and Black girls and Black gender expansive folks that are experiencing the very same thing. So when it came down to really getting our mission solid, which is addressing the pathway and retention issue in the climate sector for BGEs, it was a process that honestly was just affirming the experiences that we know that we've been having and coming together to create really solid resources to address them in ways that actually center us and are actually being led by people closest to the circumstance, because right now a lot of the pathway and retention programming or initiatives in climate are not led by young people, and they're also not being led by Black or Indigenous people. Yet we are the demographics that are disproportionately impacted by the climate crisis. The mission itself was a community effort, and I've been really lucky to have just such a great network, honestly, of mentors that I've gotten throughout the years, other BGEs that have been like mentoring laterally and horizontally in this journey of navigating a nonprofit as a young person, because it's been very difficult.
Well, thank you for walking us through that. I'm just personally, I'm touched by the work that you do with BGE. I wanted to be an environmentalist as a little girl. I remember
in my car, seeing like the emissions and the fumes and the fires and be like, we need to put an end to this injustice. But it's inspiring to hear that you were doing the work as a 14-year-old. So I want to get into more of a definition-esque part, just because the jargon of some of these words are confusing. So we often hear the phrase of climate change thrown around, but some don't know the true definition. Can you define the following terms for us? So we'll start off with climate change.
So also I want to first affirm you and say that if you care about clean air, clean water, and support your community, then you're an environmentalist. I think that the movement has done a really poor job around actually having a definition that people can relate to and that is relevant to all of us. And that has been a losing strategy because it really comes down to addressing the scale and scope of this circumstance we're in. We're experiencing ecological breakdown that's tied to human activity, and not everybody. It's not like we all caused the climate crisis. The climate crisis was caused by the fossil fuel industry. As for the climate crisis, I like to call it the climate crisis. Obviously, climate change is a technical term, but using the term crisis, I feel like, really is doing a more intentional job by fossil fuel interests and was paid for from blood money, from chattel slavery. So I think what's really interesting is if you take a climate science class or even look up on Google, like what caused the climate crisis, you're going to see greenhouse gas emissions that can be tied to like the Industrial Revolution and the influx of greenhouse gases that came about with our global economy being shifted in that way. But the Industrial Revolution didn't come about randomly. It's not the father of the climate crisis because it didn't pay for itself. It didn't raise itself. It was subsidized with blood money from chattel slavery and validated by Manifest Destiny. If we look back to, I don't know, like 1860, for example, enslaved people represented the largest single financial asset in the entire economy, like worth more than manufacturing and railroads combined. And that doesn't even include the crops that they produced, right? Like the sugar, the tobacco, and of course, cotton. So we already know that enslaved people subsidized the entirety of American life. We know that the US economy was built off of that wealth. So in the face of the abolishment of chattel slavery, the U.S. launched itself into a new economic system paid for by the same family, same generational wealth, the Industrial Revolution, where we went from extracting from the backs of enslaved Africans and the extraction of the land to a new type of extraction, which is the grounding of the climate crisis. So I think it's really important to acknowledge those connections, because when it comes to the solving the climate crisis, it requires us getting to the roots of how we got here and understanding that climate solutions require addressing systemic racism, addressing the historic and continuing impacts of colonialism and imperialism, the same systems that caused the climate crisis in the first place.
Okay, so what about environmentalism?
Yeah, so like I said before, I think the definition for environmentalism is pretty simple. It's value-based, right? It's, do you care about clean air? Do you care about clean water? Do you believe that we all deserve access to these basic human rights? Do you care about our ecosystems being able to continue to exist? Do we care about a future for ourselves, our aging parents, our future bloodlines, if we choose to have them or not? If the answer is yes to any of these questions, then you are an environmentalist because you have a set of values that are around caring for yourself and our holistic ecosystems.
And you definitely just affirmed little Jaina, so I appreciate that. And lastly, environmental justice.
Yeah, so basically environmental justice asserts that all people deserve access to a clean and healthy environment, regardless of their race, socioeconomic status, their ethnicity, their country of origin, just requires that we all have equitable access and pathways into experiences that allow us also to self-determine what a healthy environment is. And the reality is that all of our relationships with the environment are not all ones that are equal and are not ones that allow us to have a healthy environment. And oftentimes it is, especially in the context of the United States, it's race that determines our relationship to the environment as well as our proximity to environmental hazards.
Well, thank you for breaking those terms down. I'm curious, why is it important for college students to care about climate change?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that question. It's important. Like if we were to do like a large umbrella, everybody in it, we are all going to experience the impacts of the climate crisis. And most of us already have. It just is a matter of whether or not we have the language to make those connections or not. Which is why I'm really adamant about talking about how the climate crisis isn't just an ecological crisis, it's also a narrative crisis. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't know how to name these experiences that we all are having and recognize as being climate related. And so for college students, the average college student is a young person that is in college attempting to gain the skills and resources to be able to be young change makers. The climate crisis is the biggest threat of all time, because not only does it create new problems, but it exacerbates and intensifies all existing social ills. So the climate crisis is this thing that we can either experience the impacts of or decide to be a part of the solutions that can ultimately allow us to, in my opinion, love a better world into existence.
Well, thank you for explaining that, Wawa. So a big part of your work is making climate issues accessible. Could you break down some of today's urgent climate issues?
I can talk about extreme heat. So that's an example where I think we all experienced and saw the impacts of the heat waves and the extreme heat that happened this summer and last summer. But this past July was actually the hottest month ever recorded in history. And that's not by accident. That is tied to the climate crisis. And oftentimes people might be confused as to how that circumstance, for example, showcases the ways in which the climate crisis doesn't impact us all the same. There's this saying that I like to say, which is we're all experiencing the same storm, which is the climate crisis, but we're all not in the same boat. So when we look at demographics that have been disproportionately impacted by extreme heat, an obvious example would be the houseless populations, but also Black communities in general. So we think about Black communities and where we are, particularly in our cities, the reality is that there has been a ton of research that showcases that previously redlined communities are actually hotter, by 5 to 13 degrees hotter than neighborhoods that weren't previously redlined and that are predominantly white. Why? Well, when we think about redlining, the discriminatory lending practices in the 1920s, those areas were also disproportionately chosen and selected for the placement of highways, the placement of warehouses, the placement of essentially infrastructure with impervious surfaces that absorb heat, making them actually hotter from the concrete. In addition to the fact that these very same communities don't have the same amount of canopy cover or green space, which also supports with mitigating extreme heat. So that's an example in which, while extreme heat was something we all experienced, whether it was like not being able to go to, I don't know, a festival because it messed up the energy sourcing, or just being uncomfortable going outside, or even sometimes the infrastructure of the buildings we're in aren't actually created for this type of heat, Black communities were actually hotter. And so that's a very clear example of how this is like an issue that we're all experiencing, but because of things like redlining, discriminatory lending practices, and the history of Jim Crow, we are seeing how, for example, infrastructure can lead to worse outcomes and health outcomes for Black communities and Black college-age students as well.
Wow. That is, I would never think about July being so hot in that way. So that's definitely something I think we should all look into more closely. as we're transitioning into warmer temperatures, just on average with the climate crisis.
Right.
Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Hey ladies, it's Dr. Joy here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It's crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us. Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or our community, your health is invaluable. Let's help to get our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head over to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us, and let's take care of our hearts together. May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and Macy's is highlighting some really cool AAPI-owned brands right now, online and in-store. Some of my favorites are the jewelry from Hey Maeve, and the skincare products from Kaja. For the entire month of May, join Macy's in supporting AAPI-owned fashion brands. You can show your support by donating online or by rounding up in store to benefit APIA scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. Join me by rounding up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support API Scholars, an educational nonprofit. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Hi, I'm Zaria Taylor, and I'm the TBG podcast production intern. We'll return to Jaina right after the break.
So what other ways do climate issues affect the Black community?
The fact that Black youth are actually experiencing eco-anxiety, climate anxiety at very high rates. My hot take, and which isn't really a hot take, is that I think eco-anxiety is an environmental justice issue and that it disproportionately impacts Black youth. In the spaces that I'm in, I hear eco-anxiety and climate grief all the time, but I realize that that terminology might not be as talked about in other spaces. So eco-anxiety, ecological grief is defined by the American Psychological Association as, quote, a chronic fear of environmental doom, which may include feelings of worry, fear, guilt, despair, shame, and even hope. This is just something that young people in general are experiencing. However, because like I said before, the climate crisis doesn't impact all people and communities equally, neither does ecological grief, right? The nature of a person's eco-anxiety often is dependent upon how immediate the impacts of climate change are on their lives. And that immediacy often depends on privilege. I just gave you an example on how extreme heat looks different in different communities. But when we also think about the existing resources that are and largely are not there, especially for Black youth in regards to mental health services and access to those spaces, Black youth are already more at risk of depression, anxiety, and stress. And I believe Black girls right now have the highest rising suicide rate in the country. So if those are the existing circumstances and the baseline of where we're in, when you bring climate, natural disasters, and all of these circumstances in which climate is intensifying existing circumstances, creating new problems, displacing people, and we know it's this imminent threat that's getting worse. Why is it that when you type in eco-anxiety, you will never hear a nuanced conversation of how it impacts particularly Black and Indigenous people and Black and Indigenous youth? That we're in this situation where we're kind of like, we didn't lead to these dynamics. Our grandparents didn't do it. Like, our grandparents were the people seeding the money for the Industrial Revolution. We definitely weren't the ones that were behind chattel slavery. So there is a huge narrative issue, and that narrative issue actually informs the resources that exist around eco-anxiety. Because I think that a lot of us are rightfully very fearful and don't know where to go about all these really complex emotions that we're feeling about climate. And unfortunately, right now, the mainstream space has really embraced this colorblind perspective on eco-anxiety. And I think that it's a missed opportunity as well, because I think that all of these complex things that we're experiencing and emotions can actually be pushed towards action. I get really angry when I think about the climate crisis. There's like a lot of anger that I have, and finding sustainable pathways, communities like BGE, where you get to be in community with other people that are experiencing the same things, have a space to talk about them up front, even if it's uncomfortable, and then have avenues to contribute it towards advocacy and action that is supporting our communities very directly and very intentionally. All of those things are, to me, pathways for us to begin addressing this.
Like you said, with so much distressing news about the climate crisis, some people feel overwhelmed and disheartened, that leading them to withdraw or lose motivation to care. So what are some words of advice or encouragement that you would share with someone grappling with these emotions or even climate anxiety?
Yeah, I feel like it's always an interesting line to toe. I feel like when I'm specifically like talking to like Black women around addressing climate, because everything inside of me, I know for a fact that we will solve the climate crisis when Black women are in leadership, period. Like, Black women are the first in line of defense with fascism in this country. We literally hold up democracy on our backs. And I also don't want us to be martyrs. So it's this balancing act. Generally, I'd say, like, here's the thing. When I'm talking to, like, other Black people, I don't need any convincing of whether or not people should act. Like, social advocacy, activism is our generational birthright, point blank period. We think about examples of youth organizing in the climate space in the past decade, for example, like the Sunrise Movement, that was largely behind this recent announcement around the climate Corps, which will be providing climate jobs for 20,000 young Americans. Sunrise Movement, quite literally, and they are known for like acknowledging this, they're organizing platforms and strategy literally comes from the textbooks of the civil rights movement. So I feel like in this moment, there is this unique opportunity, particularly from so many aspects of our community, whether we're talking about how to navigate hope in a time of despair, literally look no further than the Black church, like an institution that has been able to support folks in the midst of so much. You literally don't have to look any further than, you know, civil rights leaders and activists, many of folks that are still alive, that have children that have been able to like remain leaders in our communities. So much of what the climate movement is looking for, I believe, exists in our communities. So it's just a matter of integrating, like I'd say, like a climate lens into existing work, because I don't necessarily believe that you necessarily have to go outside of what's going on for it to be climate adjacent. But that's also, I'd say, like carving out spaces for us to be able to intentionally address the way that climate is impacting us. And that's why, like, I always give the pitch to people, if you're looking for a community of other Black women and Black gender expansive folks, especially if you're like Gen Z, you should follow Black Girl Environmentalists, join one of our hubs. We have 10 hubs across the US. We're in everywhere from New Orleans to Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, Miami. I'm on the spot, so I'm like, what about DC, Philly? We're in the Bay, we're in Houston, we're in Atlanta, and we do bi-monthly engagements in each of these cities and have already cultivated really beautiful community spaces for us to essentially engage in climate action and advocacy, but also rest. Like, our spaces can like be anything from going to like a town hall together or going to a march together to meeting up with a Black beekeeper and getting to see that process, or all having like a self-care day, or like going to a happy hour. I think there are ways for us to come together and rest and heal and have spaces of resilience. That's building collective power. So when we need to show up, we already have that community that we can come together and do the things.
I love that BGE has that. While you were in college, how did you balance your studies with your climate activism in running the organization?
Yeah, so I'll like quickly clarify. I mostly was navigating BGE and schoolwork in grad school. So like I graduated undergrad May of 2020, but I still was doing this balancing act of being a climate activist in school. And it was really difficult. But something that really, really helped me was having mentors within the school system that supported me and knew what I was doing was really important, and finding ways to have allies in the system. I think for me, like I did a degree in like environmental studies. So our program was already very, very small. I had the privilege of getting really close with a lot of my professors. So like they kind of got it. So I was able to like, in a lot of ways, sometimes finesse credit for things I was doing outside of the classroom. And those things started because I was asking. I was like, is there any way we could do like an independent study for this project or this internship? And it was interesting because when I was able to like have a very clear ask and deliverable that would come out of this independent study, for example, most times people were willing to work with me. And I understand that was like a huge, huge privilege. And looking back, and when I tell people that, they're like, wait, what? But I think it begins with asking. I think a lot of people aren't asking. So there, I'd also say, looking back, there's a lot of things that I wouldn't do again. And I did a really bad job at balancing. I wouldn't necessarily change the way I did college, but looking back, I was perpetually burned out. I was taking at least 20 credits a semester and working at least 30 hours outside of class, which meant I was barely sleeping. And the reason why I was doing all this was because I was like, climate crisis is so urgent. If I'm not spending all this time doing this, what am I doing? Yada, 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 yada. And looking back, I wish that I was able to like really fully appreciate the communities that I was organizing alongside with, because no successful movement allows for folks to perpetually burn out. We should feel comfortable to take a step back and to take care of our mental health, to take care of our soul, like our personal relationships, to just have time to be a young person, being young, doing fun, sometimes stupid stuff. You know what I mean? And the only wish I'd have for my younger self is that I wish that I had the wisdom I have now, or had someone in my life like look me in the eye and be like, Wawa, the climate crisis, it's here. It's not going anywhere. You deciding to not take this job or not take this internship for a semester or even a year isn't going to make you any less qualified, or isn't going to make you know what I mean? Like, there were opportunities looking back that I'm like, I definitely could have taken a step back. I could have done a lot better with my health. And so I would say, just like being honest with oneself, I feel like there's a lot of pressure when you're in college to do it all and be all the things to all the people in your life. And the reality is that it's a journey. It's a journey. Once you're done with that, now you're going to be post-grad. And that's another journey. So the best thing is just like to pace yourself. Like, these problems, unfortunately, they're not going away. But when we are working towards finding sustainable pathways for us to contribute, that actually is better for the movement as a whole, right? Because at the end of the day, the way that I think about the environment and our holistic ecosystems, our bodies are a part of that. When people are like, your body's a temple, your body's a part of our ecosystem. So taking care of yourself is a form of environmental action to me and in the communities that I'm building alongside. And if someone in my community is burnt out, they're not even useful for themselves to be able to like actually experience the world that we're seeking to save and love into even a better iteration. So I think that framing of being like, we should have time to experience all the things that we are trying to save and trying to love on.
I love that so much. You mentioned some good, important tips to college students right now to like know the signs of burnout and to know that you're not going to be able to conquer it all right here, right now and today. And also to honor yourself, because to your point, you are a part of this ecosystem. So I love that. That's super powerful. What guidance or tips would you offer to Black women activists, both within and outside of climate activism, when discovering and asserting their voices?
Yeah, I have a couple tips. I'd say also the first thing I'd want to say, and something that I'm navigating all of these things still now, but one of the first things is, you aren't your work, you aren't your output. That's quite literally like a symptom of this sick system that we're in, which is capitalist system that quite literally places our value and our worth on the output of work that we're putting out there and on the external validation of people telling you that your work is valuable. That is, lack of a better word, bullshit. You are valuable and precious regardless of what you do. And I think that this is something that I'm definitely navigating now, of Wawa as Wawa, me, like my full name is Wujiko. So not even Wawa, like Wujiko is beautiful outside of the work that I do and outside of what people might assume I am or who I am. And I'd say a part of that and setting yourself up for success just in general is having people in your life that value you outside of that. I think that unfortunately, ego can come in when you're doing activist work. Being able to like stay true to the things that got us into this space. And sometimes we need people in our lives that can be like, hey, you need to check yourself. Like, the movement's about the movement. The movement isn't about me as an individual, you as an individual. We are trying to collectively empower and better our communities. And being reminded of that and being in environments that are constantly reminding you that is so, so important. And something that I'm in the midst of, like making sure that I'm holding myself accountable to those things. I'd also say that it's completely fine to change your mind, change your ideas. We're young, we're growing. And I think in this public facing activist space, there is this tendency for people to be pigeonholed and want to pigeonhole themselves around exactly what they're working on or how they're saying things. And honestly, it's normal to change your mind. It's healthy. It actually is what we should be doing. Like, I look back to what not necessarily because it was wrong, I just grew in experience and perspective. And so while I might have had a different perspective on X thing at 18, now I'm 24 and I'm like, oh, well, I actually don't believe that necessarily. And I think that it's actually a great sign for yourself if you're able to like address that head on. Yeah, I actually don't agree with myself 5 years ago. That's totally fine. Because also other people need to hear that so that they feel like it's okay. And then lastly, another piece of advice that I have is just around wellness and well-being, because like so many of the people that I know that are like activists, because the work that we do is so urgent and feels so urgent because it is, we do really put, oftentimes, like we'll put taking care of ourselves on the back burner. I recently started trying to work out more regularly just because I really needed those endorphins, and the difference has been like great. And sometimes that's taking a little hot girl walk outside. Sometimes it is just going outside. There's tons of research that shows that even like 5 to 10 minutes outside can like really, really impact your mental health. For example, the outdoors and nature does have a lot of antidotes to what circumstances that we are experiencing. And sometimes it is like, I needed to take a walk and now I feel a lot better. Go outside, take a walk, move your body, and know that again, like taking care of yourself, because we're a part of this collective ecosystem, is a part of ecosystem health. So like understanding ourselves in connection to others and our planet is so, so important. And I think that perspective is really good when we think about community care.
I love that for our Black women activists, our sisters doing the work. It's really important to remember that. And it's really hard, I can imagine, to remember that while you're doing the work every day.
Hi, I'm Zaria Taylor, and I'm the TBG podcast production intern. We'll return to Jaina right after the break.
Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Hey ladies, it's Dr. Joy here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It's crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us. Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or our community, your health is invaluable. Let's help to get our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head over to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us, and let's take care of our hearts together. May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and Macy's is highlighting some really cool AAPI-owned brands right now, online and in-store. Some of my favorites are the jewelry from Hey Maeve, and the skincare products from Kaja. For the entire month of May, join Macy's in supporting AAPI-owned fashion brands. You can show your support by donating online or by rounding up in store to benefit APIA scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. Join me by rounding up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support API Scholars, an educational nonprofit. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
What are three things a college student could do on their campus to contribute to climate activism and be prepared for potential climate disasters on their campuses?
Yeah, I love that question. So I would say the first thing is, and this is so different because I feel like I did know this in college, but knowing your neighbors is so important. At least know their names, say hi, build like some sort of community, especially where you're living. Why? Because in the face of, honestly, in the face of climate disaster or any type of emergency, your immediate community who is living near you, that is your lifeline. The second thing is there's a lot of colleges these days that have sustainability offices, but a lot of colleges that don't. I think that most HBCUs don't have like a sustainability office, and usually in the sustainability offices is where like folks are working on like climate action plans that can be accessible to students in the midst of, for example, a power outage or a storm or a flood or something like that. So if there is that type of institutional entity that is working on sustainability, reaching out to see if they have those resources. And if not, maybe seeing if there's like an internship opportunity to help support and develop those things. Or maybe that can be like a thesis project or an independent study situation. And then the other thing I'd say is there's not necessarily this need to, like, for example, on college campus, create a whole new climate club. There usually are like environmental or climate clubs out there, depending on your campus.
Thank you for that, Wawa. So I'm curious to know, Wawa, what is your vision for BGE in the future?
Black Girl Environmentalist, I already shared our mission. Our mission is to address the pathogen retention issue in the climate sector for BGEs, right? With a particular focus on, you know, early career folks, Gen Z, and hopefully like this new generation, Gen Alpha. But ultimately, we're here to provide community and resources to Black women and Black gender expansive folks with this focus on particularly young people. And I just want people to know that BGE is a space for them to come to find community. And it is also a space that's for you, even if you hear the term environmentalist and you're kind of like, I'm not really sure if that's something that I'm about. I already shared the way that I see environmentalism that I feel like is shared, honestly, across the movement. And so if you're even just looking for a space to meet other like Black women and like Black gender expansive folks in your community, obviously, if you're in one of the hub cities, come out to an event. It's a great way to like meet other folks, to even network, especially like laterally, which is really important. I think a goal for me in general for the organization is that I'd like to see, especially from like Black cultural spaces, is sustainability and climate being more upfront. I'm not going to name names because it's everybody, and I totally get it. But like, we have all these types of like conferences or gatherings that are really, really for us, like those are the spaces that we want to go to and that we're flying out to and whatever it might be. And there is literally no programming around climate. And it is like the biggest like mind-boggling thing to me, because I'm like, we are quite literally experiencing the climate crisis first and worst. And to be honest, I started BGE, and the space that we're cultivating in BGE largely is due to the fact that I don't trust the mainstream climate movement to create spaces for us in which like we're actually being resourced from the early career into senior leadership and realizing our full potential in climate leadership. I don't see those spaces as necessarily having the resources or even having the purview to know that that's something that they should be doing if they're actually equity focused. So like, we have to be focusing on building within our own communities. And what I would like BGE to do in helping to bridge those gaps is to help show up in those spaces, to go to the Essence Fest and the Culture Cons. I guess I'll name drop. So the manifesting, being able to connect BGEs that are already leading in climate, because trust me, there are Black women that are out here. Dr. Beverly Wright, who is like one of the foremost environmental justice scholars in the country, in the world, who is a Black woman that like started as a professor at Dillard University at the age of 27 in the Deep South and has been doing this work for decades that should be platformed in these spaces, that should be out here in the non-climate Black spaces so that we can better make these narrative connections so that we are well prepared in the face of a climate disaster, flooding, storm, whatever it might be, and that we have the resources to know how to navigate those things. In a perfect world, I like to see every institution, whether it's like a church, whether it's a school, whether it's whatever type of gathering space, for example, having a climate action plan. We should, and we don't. It's not something that we oftentimes have the resources to know how to navigate. And so I see BGE as being a space in which people can see themselves reflected in the space, in this movement, and one that can connect people to the climate sector as a way for folks to build generational wealth from their career, but then also be able to do work that is supporting the vitality and health and well-being of our communities, because climate connects with everything. And so any opportunity that BGE can continue to bring those conversations, bring resources, particularly to Black women and Black gender expansive folks, we're going to do it. And so like a goal of mine would be that we are in, by next year, 20 cities, that we have 20 hubs, that we're able to have like a national summit every single year where BGEs from around the country can come and network and build community, build collective power. I'd love for us to have a podcast like y'all one day to be able to explore these conversations. And I'm going to put a quick plug. We are launching our Hazel and Johnson Fellowship next summer, named after the mother of environmental justice, Hazel and Johnson. Look her up. And we will be placing 12 to 15 early career BGEs, college students, actually, at 10-week climate internships. And those internships are across disciplines. So some of the placements actually, for example, we're going to have an intern or two at Coachtopia, which is the sub-brand of Coach, who is actually one of our leading funders for this fellowship program, where folks are going to be able to be at the forefront of the circular economy that's happening within the fashion industry and be able to learn from experts that are quite literally leading that from like a luxury brand perspective. We're also going to have folks that are interning at grassroots environmental justice organizations, folks that are going to be working at the intersection of ESG and finance. For example, finance is a space that has the fastest growing jobs in the green economy, but the least amount of talent to fit that. So there's tons of potential for like young Black women to get their bag in that space and do good work. So like having more pathways for people to get their foot in the door to ultimately continue to have a career in climate at whatever discipline that you're in. So if that's something that you're interested in, definitely make sure to follow us on Instagram, follow our website, and be on the lookout in the next couple of months for the application, because this program is going to be the first of its kind for Black women and Black gender expansive young people to be able to actually have Black mentorship navigating the climate sector, have a foot in the door in a lot of these institutions or placements that can be really difficult and competitive to get in, and have that direct entry in a way that's culturally competent. And that also allows us to create spaces for community to be built amongst the fellows.
That sounds amazing. And I fully believe that BGE will do everything you just said and more. Do you have any recommended podcasts or social media pages that we should look into to deepen our knowledge of climate action?
I have a ton of suggestions. The first thing I want to shout out is a new show, actually. It is called Wild Kingdom, and it is a show that actually ran for over 40 years and is coming back with a co-host by the name of Dr. Raewyn Grant, who is a friend of mine, a Black woman that's leading in the space of wildlife conservation. And she's just like the sweetest person, the most intelligent person as well. And I'm so excited to be able to celebrate her on the big screen, because as we all know, we don't often see Black women in science communication, let alone nature broadcasting. So she's quite literally making history. So if you have some time to watch it, support. As far as social media accounts, obviously I'm going to tell you to follow Black Girl Environmentalist. We are great. We're always posting events that we're doing in person, as well as just posting educational content and resources that are focused particularly for Gen Z, so college age students as well. Other folks that I would suggest to follow are, from the outdoorsy point of view, there's like Hike Club, which is another incredible organization. It's an intersectional hike club for women of color, and they are really, really great. The founder, Evelyn, is such a visionary and does so much for our community. Color, the Trails is also a good organization. Peace in the Wild is an incredible organization. They are based in Atlanta, Georgia. So if you're in the ATL and you're looking for community, we have a hub in ATL too, but I'm going to put them on. If you're looking for particularly opportunities to do fun outdoor activities, they put on really, really incredible outdoor experiences for Black folks in the state of Georgia. And yeah, they're really, really cool. As far as direct resources, I would really recommend, there's this book called Black Earth Wisdom. It's a collection of soulful conversations with Black environmentalists. It has a pretty intergenerational set of experts that are essentially, at the beginning, it starts with giving a very, very clear look into the legacy of Black women in particular and our relationship with earth advocacy. Everyone from like Harriet Tubman as a naturalist, as a wilderness expert, and making sure that we're like putting respect on her name, especially in the space of wildlife conservation and nature and outdoors knowledge. She's one of the OGs and should be understood as such. And this book just does such a good mix of historical accounts to really be able to ground ourselves and our ancestry in this work, but also just beautiful words and conversations from Black folks across the diaspora that are incredible and are leading in this space. So I would really recommend that book.
Thank you for sharing all of those. Where can we keep up with you? What are your social media handles and website?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram and TikTok. My Instagram is wawa_gatheru, so wawa_gatheru. And my TikTok is that without the underscore, so just wawa_gatheru. And yeah, feel free to follow me there. Tap in if you're interested. Also reach out if you're interested in learning more about getting into climate.
Thank you so much, Wawa, for meeting with us and indulging me in all the work that you do. Keep going. I'm so proud of the work that you're doing, and we need it so bad. So thank you so much again for talking with me.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me out.
I want to thank Wawa once again for joining us for this episode. Class is over for now, but before we dismiss, take the following notes from my conversation with Wawa home with you. Find out if your university has a sustainability office on campus. If not, explore opportunities with your professors to create one. Get involved with your campus climate club or find a local one in your neighborhood. Work with your family, friends, and neighbors to create a climate plan in case of an emergency. To learn more about the work Wawa is doing or to do more research on this topic, be sure to visit therapyforblackgirls.com/TBGU. This episode was produced by Frida Lucas, Elise Ellis, and Zaria Taylor. Editing is by Denison L. Bradford.
Hey ladies, it's Dr. Joy. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.